Well, tonight is the opening of the new season of Sacred Music at the Cathedral. It is situated at St. Augustine Church in downtown Kalamazoo. The music director of St. Augustine, Tom Fielding, is the man who created the series and is also here today to introduce the first guest artist, Krista Miller. Tom, great to have you back. It's been quite a while.
It certainly has. It just feels great to be back in your studio.
Tom, I know that it's been a crazy couple of years.
Not only
with the pandemic, but for a while you were having to be very creative with the series because the church itself was having a whole new makeover.
Yeah, so we just rededicated the sanctuary this past December 12th, it's just stunning now. Krista's recital will be stunning as well, but if for no other reason, you should just come and just see the church. we've had some COVID supply delays, so there will be some issues with the lighting and the sound system for speaking, but I think we'll be able to make those work well enough to get through tonight. Another fun thing that I've started we used to be able to we had chairs that weren't fixed to the floor that we could reverse, and now we have fixed pews, which is great. We've gotten rid of the padded chair, so our acoustics is so live. We have about two and a half seconds of reverberation now, so the organ music just glows in the room, and the instrument sounds better than ever. But because of that, I've decided we have a screen and a projector, so we're going to put a camera on the organ console so people can see what she's doing during the recital.
Oh, wow. That's have you seen that before in concerts?
It's fairly common now. I've done a number of recitals, and I've attended quite a few recitals where this is the case. And, you know, audiences just love to be able to see what's going on.
Yeah, yes, indeed. I'm flashing back on a documentary I saw about a competition in Montreal where they showed, the judges had to listen to a whole roster of terrific organists, and the audience got to see how the players were navigating the keyboards. Right? Such a complicated, wonderful instrument. It changes from venue to venue, as we've talked about many times before, Tom. And the venue you are most used to, Krista Miller, right now, you are director of music and cathedral organist at Houston's Co-Cathedral of the Sacred Heart. And wow, Houston, you've come a long way from your city.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I have. It's really nice to be somewhere where there is fall weather. So it's good to be here.
Is that because, are you really a Midwesterner to begin with? Or
I actually was born not far from here, but most of my life has been spent in the South. So my parents' hometown is in northern Indiana. It's just always nice to get back to where there are seasons. It was like around 90 when I left. So we're ready for the summer to be over.
I'm interested in hearing about your job, the scope of the parish? Like, is it a large church? And are you in charge of many choirs and putting together special music for service after service? What is the scope you're dealing with?
That's a great question. It's actually probably pretty similar to Dr. Fielding's job here at St. Augustine. So many of our cathedral colleagues around the nation kind of do similar work. So you are right. I have a number of weekend duties where we're preparing music for both the parish and then also for some larger scale events. So the Archdiocese of Galveston Houston has about 1.5 million Catholics. And so our cathedral is extremely busy with specials, with, special events and masses and guests and tourists. So it's quite a bit of music making. We did have a number of choirs prior to COVID. We're slowly reopening. So we've reinstituted just about 2 weeks ago. Our professional choral ensemble is back at some masses, and then our volunteers are back at some masses as well. So, just like everywhere else, slowly reopening and trying to get back to normal.
When did you become the director of music at this cathedral in Houston?
I first went to the co-cathedral in 2006. And at that time, we were in an old church that had been elevated to a cathedral on the mainland. We're Galveston, Houston, because the original basilica, which is quite small, it seats about, I think, about 200 people, is on Galveston Island, where the Diocese of Texas was founded, because it's a port city. But then on the mainland, they elevated a parish church, which was fairly small compared to servicing 1.5 million Catholics. So in 2008, they built the building that we're in now, which seats about roughly 2,000. And put in a new organ and did all those things. So it's been a great, especially the last 10 years with the new organ, it's been a really great place to make music and to be in residence.
I imagine you feel that you are a musician first, and you love playing music, preparing music, sharing music, but a lot of the responsibilities that go along with being a music director for this co-cathedral to me means you're also really, you have to organize your time very carefully. Your calendar is probably always available nearby to look at. You're scheduling things. You're cooperating with everyone who's there professionally. And is that something a master's degree or a doctor's degree prepares you for?
Oh, gosh, you're a very good musician's advocate. Here's the thing I've noticed in my cathedral colleagues, you know, people around the nation that do this work. I mean, the answer to that, in a way, is no. You know, going to school doesn't prepare you necessarily. However, I do think that the graduate work prepares you to think and gives you life skills beyond just playing. I think that the discipline required to play and to earn those academic credentials is the same discipline in managing your calendar, in managing your time, other professionals. So, and then I kind of cheated this a little bit too, because I have a prior career before I did music full time, in which I got some corporate experience, and so I feel like I draw on that a lot as well in terms of managing.
Tom has something
to
say.
Yeah, I was going to say. Oh, yeah. Honestly, that's a really great question, and I know from working with a lot of my colleagues, and honestly, clergy as well, we could all do from a one semester business administration course.
For sure.
In grad school, because you know, a lot of I have colleagues who really rely on an actual department administrator to do all that things for them, because they're, and I mean, it's wonderful. They're very good artists, but that's, their mind is totally focused on that. And those kinds of really organized details get a little skewed. So, yeah.
And a lot of you professional musicians would be kind of making it up as you go, at each position, with, you know, different people you're coordinating with. But it would probably be helpful, like you said, to just have, well, here's some of the best practices in dealing with being an organist at a certain,
I feel like employed. I've given, sorry. I feel like I've given this talk at a couple of schools, you know, where people are like, can you come in and talk to our graduating class about like these things? Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I think that I've always really enjoyed people. And I think a lot of times, like thinking about building a team, to have some of the skills that you're talking about, like complementary skills, I feel like that's like a great thing to do, just like you would put together a good choir, you know. So I do think that there are some parallels.
Yeah, there are some really notorious stories in our profession about musicians who couldn't quite stay within a budget.
Right. Well, absolutely. And, you know, if you're focused on longevity and, you know, you might want to cultivate some of those skills. However, let's switch to the music.
Great.
That's enough of that. Tonight, it's all about you, solo recital at St. Augustine Cathedral, the newly renovated and beautiful sounding organ there. Was it Nicholson Simpson,
2002.
Yeah. Okay. And because we have music here to offer, I would like to just jump in, Krista. Should we start with the Bach?
That would be a great place to start. That's how I'll open the program tonight as well. I've put together just a little bit about the program. I kind of feel like it's really more not all about me, but all about us. I've thought about two halves of this program. A lot of musicians are offering programs of hope right now as we open, and I certainly wanted to do that. But in the first half of the program, I also wanted to kind of create space for people to feel the difficulty of the last year or two. So I'm definitely opening with this Bach because of the opening pedal scale. It's rising, it's ascending. There's a folklore that it could possibly refer to the resurrection. And so I'm sort of like setting out this promise before the rest of the program gets a little bit more tumultuous.
And where were you when you recorded this?
This is recorded at the Co-Cathedral of the Sacred Heart on Martin Pozzi's Opus 19 organ, installed in 2010.
We have to leave it at just the prelude of that amazing Bach piece, a prelude and fugue in D major. If you tuned in during the music, that was a live performance by my guest, Krista Miller, performing at her home church. It's the Co-Cathedral of the Sacred Heart in Houston, Texas. She is visiting Kalamazoo today to present a solo recital on the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series, which is curated by Tom Fielding, who's also here in the studio. Krista, that sounded beautiful. Actually, I liked the sound of that organ, too.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much.
I didn't ask where you went to school. Where were you? Where did you get your organ chops?
Yeah, well, you asked me if I was from the Midwest earlier. So I actually did my DMA at Eastman School of Music.
Eastman.
So, yeah. So,
in Rochester,
yeah.
New York.
Yeah.
Wonderful school.
Yeah, which was a wonderful experience. And then my master's in organ is from University of Houston. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
Tonight's concert does begin at 7 o'clock. It's free and open to anyone. And these days we talk about some of the safety precautions that the venue is asking or requiring. And maybe Tom can talk about
sure.
that a little bit.
Yeah. So we're going to follow. We'll follow the state guidelines. So masks won't be required, although we do hope that those who are not vaccinated would wear one. We are going to respect privacy and not ask for proof of vaccination. Organ recitals, like we were saying, our cathedral seats a little over 700, and we usually have an avid audience of 50 people, so there'll be plenty of room to distance. So if you're still a little uncomfortable about, you know, being in a group, we're going to reserve the side aisle specifically for distanced seating. And then and with the acoustics so much improved now, the organ just fills the room, so there's really not going to be a bad seat in the house. Mm-hmm. The screen for the projection of the console will be in the center aisle, and I would guess that will be a little more a little closer seating. So I hate to say that if you want distancing, you won't be able to see that, but it's just the logistics. We don't have like a fixed screen like some churches have. So this is just, you know, something I have to set up in the main aisle.
Yeah. Yeah. So it may draw more people to it, but hey, arrive tonight at 7 o'clock, see what's what, see where you feel like sitting. And like you said, there's no bad seat at pretty much any organ.
No, recital. And you know, we just made this joke, you know, during the piece, and it's so true because organ recitals get typically a small turnout, and churches are typically so large that have nice organs that we've been socially distancing long before COVID. I mean, it's
Krista, you were actually, I'd like to hear more about your thinking about the pieces on this recital, because you were talking about the Bach as an offering of hope with that ascending scale in the beginning, and just an acknowledgement that it's been difficult and we are coming back together again to some degree. And you've kind of married that philosophy with the pieces on your program.
I have. I love to program for the current time and for the audience who may be arriving. And this Bach prelude that you just played is a great sort of synopsis of the whole program. So there's that hopeful rising scale. The prelude ends with a little bit of like forward-looking chromaticism. It sounds a little angstful. And the fugue that you did not play is, of course, one of the happiest of the Bach works. And so there's kind of all the emotions in this piece. And so that's kind of how I've designed this particular program. The first half, other than the Bach, is all pieces that came to me during COVID. So they're all fairly new for me. And
really?
They all kind of have an end of life theme and sort of a loss, except that the half will end with another statement of resurrection. I think that the audience will get it immediately after all of this, you know, sort of dark stuff. There's this beautiful end to the Dupre that is hopeful, E major. Couldn't be happier, really. And of course, the second half is very happy. The Moulet that I sent you is just one of the most exuberant pieces I can think of. And the Hakim that I end the program with is also a romp of fireworks, and probably you'll want to see the screen for that piece. but, you know, I kind of did this thinking of two things. I think that music does serve to give us hope right now. But I also wanted to, as I mentioned, just kind of create space for people to acknowledge that this year has been hard. You said also during the piece a moment ago that we've earned it. And I think we have. And I mean, me personally, I feel like as cathedral musicians, during this time, you kind of have to check your own feelings at the door and arrive and be a voice of hope for your congregants, do your job, try to put a good face on things that have been difficult. And I think for me personally, that can just be tiring sometimes. And in Houston this past weekend, we had a number of concerts, and I found myself feeling like, I really want to go, but it's also a lot of energy to say that, yes, everything is going great. And all of my colleagues also that I talked to, you know, the going great, you could tell like, well, it's not that great, but I'm keeping on. I'm doing my best to keep going, and this is going to get better. And it is getting better. But, you know, I just wanted to create space for people if they wanted to think about the struggle that has taken us to today. And then, as I mentioned, then, of course, like, you know, the sun will come out in the Dupre, and then the entire second half is very, very happy and, you know, very hopeful and future looking. But I just personally, I just think it's nice to acknowledge sometimes that, wow, this was hard. And that's it. Yeah, I just want to say it's hard.
Yeah. And, you know, Krista, we're hearing how you're looking at these pieces, but it's absolute music. It's instrumental. I might sit there and think, this suits me for a whole different reason. You know, there's that's the wonderful thing about instrumental music for me is you can bring to it whatever you're feeling at the moment.
Yeah, the individual creates the program, which is, you know, which is just a wonderful thing because, like you said, you know, I mean, you're playing maybe a darker first half because of COVID, and yet someone else could be having a completely different set of personal things going on that they bring to it as well. And then that second half helps resolve some of that. And I think it's going to be a lovely thing.
I like I sometimes like darker, if I hate to use, I don't really want to use that word exactly, but I find it comforting sometimes. I mean, when Brahms goes dark, I'm like, thank you.
Well, both the Brahms and the Franck were the composer's last works. And so, especially with the Franck three chorales, people tend to think that those are legacy pieces. You know, those are things that the composer wanted to write down as a reflection on his whole other works and a gift to everyone. Like, this is my life's work and this is, you know, encapsulated in 15 minutes, you know. So I think they're also, that's why they're masterworks, because you can have all these different interpretations and also inspirations from them. So hopefully it's inspiring.
Are those the Opus Posthumus organ preludes, or the Rose, the Ist Entsprungen, or what? There's like five or six of those.
Both the Brahms and the Franck. The Franck was also published posthumously. Uh-huh. So yes, but yeah, the
beautiful piece,
Aloha, a Rose Are Blooming, the famous Brahms, is from this same collection.
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for orienting me on that.
Sure.
I want to get back to some music because you brought along some wonderful, wonderful examples. The next is Pachelbel.
Mm-hmm.
And we know Pachelbel for one thing.
I know.
Fill us in about his output, Johann Pachelbel's actual catalog legacy and meaning in the world of organ and church music.
He is not a one-hit wonder. like us, he was a church musician in South Germany, and so a lot of his output are variation sets, like the famous Canon in D. But this is a chorale. The title of the chorale is Christ Is My Life. It's 12 different variations. They're short. I love traveling with this piece because it shows every organ. So when you play this performance, it will be a little bit different than what audiences will hear at St. Augustine. It's always an opportunity to show individual stops on an organ and maybe create some sounds that people don't usually hear in the span of a service. So they're a really good opportunity to hear variation and also get to know the instrument.
That's always one of my favorite parts of an organist guest conversation. We'll save it for after the Pachelbel, how you are also an orchestrator as well as an interpreter.
Thank you.
Again, that's organist Krista Miller. She is a director of music and the organist in Houston at the Co-Cathedral of the Sacred Heart. And she's visiting Kalamazoo today to present a solo recital. Although I've dubbing it as a solo recital has clearly not been your aim, Krista. As we talk this hour, if you just tuned in, Dr. Miller is presenting a recital that she feels will allow us all to maybe come to terms a little bit with how difficult the year has been and do it at your own speed. The Paca Bell we just heard, I wanted to ask you about being a traveling organist and setting pieces on an instrument you're unfamiliar with. Have you had time with it in the last few days?
I have. It's really been delightful. You mentioned earlier about non-musical work that we do, but the nice thing about traveling is to just make music all day, you know, and to get to know an instrument and not be bounded by time or having to be anywhere else, having nothing to do but get to know that instrument and make friends with it.
What's the first thing you do?
Oh, gosh. Well, I always study on paper what's there and make some.
You look at the scheme.
Before I get here, right?
So like before. There's a map.
Well, yeah, for real. Like look at the specification before I arrive and then kind of make some guesses. But then, so then I already have questions when I arrive and see like, well, how does this stop sound? So and then I draw a lot of individual stops and listen.
Are there any stops you're like, ooh, I'm excited to see that on the schematics?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a very French program, and it's a really French instrument, too. So the harmonic flute is beautiful. The fact that there's a vox humana is really special for this Franck chorale number 2. You must have that stop, and not every organ has it. So that's
vox humana?
Yes. Yeah, human voice, right? So so that's sort of a specialty stop. So yeah, like I always listen to each of the individual stops, imagine how I might pair them. And then I'm also kind of doing this puzzle where I'm thinking about personal challenges. Two personal challenges are, can I use everything on this organ? And can
personal challenge
can and can I find a sound that probably no one's heard before? You know, what can I do creatively? So that whole happy second half that I mentioned is also sort of an exploration of the instrument. It has the Paca Bell that you just played. And then I'm also playing a piece by Fanny Mendelssohn that was not completed in her life either, but completed by an editor later. And so I always feel very free in that piece to do what I think the organ will best render. So I literally have never played it before the way I'm going to play it tonight. Tonight I'm playing it a little bit softer and a little bit more gentle than I have in the past, but it just seems to merit that on the instrument.
To interrupt. Fanny Mendelssohn is from the German Romantic tradition.
Yes. Yeah.
This is a French organ.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think that part of our art is like asking yourself, what does this instrument want to do? Like, how can you create this marriage between like this piece of music and this specification, this room, this group of people, and what they might be bringing into the performance? And so, I mean, it's like coloring with a box of crayons, you know? So
before we move on any further, I want to reiterate that it's a free concert, as all the sacred music at the Cathedral series concerts are. Begins tonight at 7 p.m.,
and of course, we'll happily accept free will donations.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's not forget that piece, Kara.
Yeah, there's an opportunity to support the series that way. But there's no barrier for access here. As far again, just to mention that there will be plenty of. There's 700 seats at the cathedral, and there will be room to space out if you're concerned about COVID exposure. If you are vaccinated, great. If you are not, please wear a mask. It makes sense to do that.
Yes.
And now back to the program with Krista. You have mentioned more pieces than we have time to go over. And I hope to end here with this toccata by Moulay, and a composer that I don't know very well at all. What can you tell us about Moulay, M-U-L-E-T?
Yes. He... Tom and I were talking about this last night. So not a lot is known about him. And I understand that Dr. Fielding is preparing some research to be published soon.
Oh, this is the composer with the stained glass piece? What am I thinking?
Yes. No, you are. So she's playing the Carillon Sortie, which is probably his one of two most popular pieces of his. What I've done work on the Esquisse Byzantine, which is the Byzantine Sketches, yes, which is a series of musical impressions of the architecture and life of the Sacré-Cœur Basilica in Paris.
Okay.
So, and its closing toccata, Tu es Petra, is very commonly played in recitals as well. So so she's definitely hitting one of his best hits. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's an interesting connection too, because so Mouley's father was at Sacred Heart Basilica, right? Sacré-Cœur in Paris. And then one of my teachers, Najee Hakim, who I'm closing the program with, was also a titular organist at Sacré-Cœur in the beginning of his career. So it's kind of an interesting connection. Like, organists are always connected, I think, by our interests. And so it's interesting sort of connection around the place of the Sacred Heart. But you asked about Mouley. Not a lot is known about him. But we do have these pieces. And the Carillon Sortie is based on bells, probably from Sacré-Cœur also. So just a very fun and fast show-off piece.
We have to leave it there. This has gone by very quickly, and I have a big sense of so much more we could have talked about. But, hey, a lot of the time we have to leave it, and you have to attend the concert in order to get the full experience. This was a nice teaser, as far as I'm concerned. Krista and Tom, thank you so much for joining me here on Classical WMUK.
Thank you.
As always, thanks for having us.
Here's Dr. Miller playing music of Mouley.